from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Nobody who works full-time should have to raise their children in poverty.
That was four-term U.S. Senator Barbara Boxer speaking at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco yesterday, talking about her push to raise the minimum wage and extend unemployment benefits. She'll join us in our opening half hour, and we'll also check in with her about California's drought, the Democrats' fight to retain control of the U.S. Senate, and the Netflix series House of Cards, which she binge-watches. Then at 9:30, we discuss The Invisible Peak. It's a new documentary short which examines the military's bulldozing of the west peak of Mount Tamalpais in the 1950s and which makes a case for cleaning up the structures and debris that still remain. Join us for Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Senator Barbara Boxer, now in her fourth six-year term in the United States Senate, joins us in this morning's first half hour. We welcome her back to the Forum program. Senator Boxer, good to have you.
Oh, it's so nice to be on your show, Michael. Thank you.
Glad to have you. And I should mention to listeners, you were at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco yesterday talking about the need not only for restoring unemployment benefits, but helping the working poor by actually raising the federal minimum wage from $7.25 to $10.10 and emphasizing the fact that about 15 million women are affected by this.
Well, actually, it's true that of all the people on the minimum wage, two-thirds of them are women, and two-thirds of tipped workers are women. And most people don't know that the federal tipped worker minimum wage is $2.13 an hour. Fortunately, in California, tipped workers get the same minimum wage as everyone else. But in many parts of the country, people are literally starving.
Yeah, we did a whole program on that. It's unconscionable. And let me get to the whole notion that you're hearing from those who are opposed to the idea of raising the minimum wage. In fact, there was a study, which I'm sure you're familiar with, that came out by the Office of the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, saying that it would kill about 500,000 jobs. And, you know, that's of concern not only to Republicans.
Well, first of all, that's an outlier study, and that's very clear to me. And I will prove it to you. There's a study that was done by the Economic Policy Institute, which shows a job gain of 85,000 jobs over 3 years. Then three very prominent university professors from UC Berkeley, from University of Massachusetts, and University of North Carolina did a major study of this in 2010 and said minimum wage does not lose jobs. And then, you know, Michael, let's just take that idea. That would mean if everyone in the past said, we better not raise the minimum wage, it loses jobs, we'd still be at a buck an hour. That's what it was when I was a kid. And I just checked the stats, and since then we've created 80 million jobs. So the CBO has a very odd way of doing things. I'm in a struggle and a tussle with them over something else dealing with my water resources bill. They really have a convoluted way. And so they're an outlier here, and we need to do this. And it helps the economy. We actually know it raises the GDP because people are lifted out of poverty. They go down to the corner store, which they couldn't do before. It also has this downward pressure on wages when the minimum wage is low. So it's a middle-class issue as well as a working poor issue.
So when the Congressional Budget Office says that the proposal would cost taxpayers about $6.5 billion, or for that matter, when the Heritage Foundation says the results would be higher unemployment and longer unemployment and an ineffective stimulus, they're outlying. They're outliers.
No. You were asking me about the minimum wage, and I'm telling you about the CBO that they're outliers. I'll give you an example of the CBO, just to be specific. When you authorize a water project, they charge you for it. When you deauthorize it, they don't give you credit for it. That's the CBO way of looking at things. But I'm not here to argue. I'm here to say we live in a world we have our eyes open. We've lived through many, many increases in the minimum wage. I don't know how old you are, Michael, but if you're close to where I am, you've seen the minimum wage go up from about a buck an hour to where it is today. and we've gained 80 million jobs. And the other thing the CBO says, which you haven't mentioned, is it will lift more than 900,000 people out of poverty. And that stimulates the economy. That's why the gross domestic product goes up. So, yeah, I would definitely trust these three professors to go up against the convoluted way the CBO does its math.
And when the Heritage Foundation, and I think I may have misspoken, I didn't mean to suggest that that was a study about the minimum wage. It was about unemployment benefits. They say that that there's going to be higher unemployment and longer unemployment.
Okay, well, we want to talk about unemployment benefits. Good, because that's also something I discussed at great length yesterday. Again, it's scandalous that this Republican Party has turned against extending aid to the long-term unemployed. That's the people out of work for more than 6 months. We've done it always. We've done it on an emergency basis without having to cut other programs to do it. Now they won't do it. We did it 5 times under George W. Bush. We've done it under Reagan. We've done it under Clinton. It's amazing. And the fact is, every study I've seen there says that it really helps the economy, and that's all documented.
We're talking to Senator Barbara Boxer, and lots of things to talk with you about, Senator. I know we only have a half hour, and there are a lot of people, obviously, who would like to ask questions of you. So let me quickly move on to the water bill, which is going to be introduced on Tuesday, I believe, to counter the one that's been put forward in the House. You and Senator Feinstein have asked for $300 million in aid, and you've got backing from, the Farm Bureau supporting the bill and the Wetlands Organization, a lot of support for this bill. Let's just talk about what it means to Californians, because I believe it allows moving the water around by state and federal agencies without essentially lifting the Endangered Species Act or overriding other legislation. That's quite the contrary.
You got it right.
Yeah. That's just the opposite of what the Republicans are putting forward, actually.
Yeah. I mean, what the Republicans want to do is just look at the problems that our farmers are having, which they are having problems for sure, as we all are on this drought. And they want to ignore all the other folks that depend on water. They want to ignore the fishing industry. They say it's people versus fish. No, it isn't. It's the fishing industry, the recreation industry, the urban water users, the suburban, the rural. It's everybody needs the water. And so what Dianne Feinstein and I said is we're not going to support a bill that is only going to lead us to the courtroom door, because you can't do that. Already the farms are taking 80% of all of our water. So we have to do this in a fair way. So, yes, your analysis of our bill is absolutely correct. We say under existing law there ought to be maximum flexibility in the operation of state and federal water projects. And that means making it easier to move water to where it is most needed. And we also do have that $300 million piece. The president came and announced that he is sending about half of that already to our state, and it was good to be with him. He's very concerned.
Yeah, the Republican bill essentially, as you say, says the drought is man-made, especially insofar as efforts to restore salmon populations and rivers have reduced water flows, and Central Valley farmers have been affected by that. Could this possibly merge into one bill, Republicans and Democrats on the House and the Senate coming together in some way?
I would love to say that would happen, and that is certainly the goal that Senator Feinstein and I have. But we're not going to pit one stakeholder against another. So if the Republicans insist on that, I think what we will do is urge this president to act through his executive powers, and he can do quite a lot of this. Quite a lot of this does not need new law.
Is there going to be a comprehensive immigration reform bill?
There ought to be. When I spoke to the Commonwealth Club, I spoke about the title of my speech was Chasing the American Dream, and although I did speak a lot about the minimum wage and unemployment, I also said one of the ways to stimulate this economy and make it really work is to pass comprehensive immigration reform. It is clear in every study, and the one I use the most is the USC study, that this is going to lead to an absolute huge job growth. It's going to lead to higher wages when people come out of the shadows and they can move confidently and buy businesses and start businesses and work and have extra funds to buy houses and the rest of it. So it's a very, very important thing. Will there be comprehensive immigration reform? I would say this to my Republican friends who may be listening. If you want to be a relevant party, join us, because we did it in the Senate in a bipartisan way. And all the House has to do is vote for our bill, and this is done.
I want to invite listeners to join us. We have limited time with Senator Boxer. So if you'd like to be a part of the program, if you have questions or comments for her, our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And Senator Boxer, just on the subject of immigration, I'm looking at a website comment. Listener says, what impact does immigration have on income inequality? One would think that supporting high immigration rates would only increase our income gap.
Well, it doesn't work that way. You might want to say that. You might want to rationalize that, but it's just not true. Absolutely not true. If you look at the studies, I'm trying to put my hair in this. According to a 2013 USC study, when we pass immigration reform and create a path to citizenship, it will inject $8 billion into California's economy alone. So.
Let me go to another question for you on the web. Kurt says, why don't you support the E-Verify amendment to the minimum wages extension? We want E-Verify. We want legal workers in our state.
There wasn't such an amendment. Because we haven't even taken up the bill yet.
Okay. So it's in fact, do you support E-Verify?
So I love being attacked for things that never even came before. I don't even know about this amendment. I'd have to look at it. I've supported E-Verify many times.
And what about, as long as we're on the subject of bills that are supported by you or bills that are perhaps working their way through, in fact, I want to ask you about a bill that's sponsored by you and Sheldon Whitehouse up in Rhode Island, but what's the likelihood of the Senate maintaining its majority of Democrats in your judgment?
Well, I think it's good, and the reason I think, just a minute, I have to... I don't know what's happening with my phone here. I'm sorry. Let me get rid of the wonders of live radio. Sorry about that.
You're not at Diablo Canyon, are you? It sounds very strange.
It's my funny ring to make sure that I pay attention. Okay, so wait a minute. What is your last question?
Asking how confident you are of the likelihood of the Senate having a majority of Democrats in the next election.
I feel good about it because I think the Republicans are just so out of step. Whether it's the minimum wage, extending unemployment compensation, there's a certain lack of compassion. And frankly, a walking away from a bipartisan consensus. These are things we've done with Republican presidents, Democratic presidents. And there's just nobody home. And they change their mind every other day. We're going to do immigration reform one day. We're not going to do it the next. I told you how good it was for California. Nationwide, immigration reform would increase our GDP over 10 years by $1.5 trillion and lead to between 750,000 and 900,000 new jobs. So this is something that has to be. So they're out of they're extreme. The American people are mainstream. And the last point I'd make, we do have a lot of red state Democrats running, and that's tough. But they are tough, and they are smart, and they are strong, and they are independent voices in the Senate. And that's the most important thing. Our candidates are really stellar.
We're talking with Senator Barbara Boxer, Democrat representing the state of California. And as I said earlier, she and Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island formed a task force back in January. Senate Democrats having an all-night floor session, in fact, in March, to do something, I presume, substantive with a Senate task force about global warming other than raising the profile, although that's been what's emphasized here.
Well, what's really important is to wake up the Congress, because everyone else seems to agree this is happening. And they keep citing the 3% of scientists who say, well, what we do doesn't matter. what the people do doesn't matter. It's all going to happen anyway. But 97% of the scientists say what we do does matter, and we do need clean energy, and we do need to make sure we preserve this planet. So the purpose of the of our task force, which I'm very excited about, by the way, has 20 members, 20% of the Senate, is to just be out there with the latest studies and the latest facts, telling people, look out the window, see this drought, see what's happening, the extreme weather that we're seeing. Even that polar vortex has a climate connection. So we are doing everything we can to wake up the Congress, and that may not seem to be enough, but let me tell you, that would do it. If Congress woke up and they finally put a price on carbon, which is what really needs to be done, we can save this planet, because at the rate we're going, we could see an increase of 7 degrees Fahrenheit, and that is very, very dangerous. It's actually twice the level that the world's governments and scientists agree will cause the most significant and dangerous impacts of climate.
Well, that's why many think there's real urgency to this.
Including the person you're talking to, and that's why we're going to do some exciting things. We're going to have an all-nighter at the Senate, and have our colleagues come down and put the facts and the truth into the record, and lots of other things that we're working on. I'm going to have a press conference next week on the tar sands issue, bringing up a subject that hasn't really been delved into before, which is the public health impacts of the tar sands.
I mentioned Diablo Canyon before because I was reading about you going up for a second time, asking the chair of the NRC about operation by PG&E, a Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant in San Luis Obispo. Have you received some kind of response from him that makes any sense at this point?
Well, actually, what I did was I had asked the NRC to comment on the new seismic activity that has been found at the plant, because, you know, I don't know whether you're for nuclear power or you're not. It seems to me you don't want to have it right on top of a seismic fault. So what I asked the NRC is, what are they doing to find out more about this seismic fault? They said, oh, they'll get back to me. So that's where we are on that.
And Frank, a listener, puts this question to you, Senator Boxer. What does Barbara Boxer think about the need to send a message to the NSA? Its top officials lied to Congress and ordered the NSA's personnel to engage in widespread illegal activities and then tried to cover it up. Their behavior is actually worse than that of organized crime and worse than the Stasi ever was. That's a strong opinion. But he wants to know, don't they need to know that they do these things? Prison is their destination?
Well, the NSA and all the issues surrounding Snowden and the rest of it is complex. It would take us a whole show, but let me just say how I feel. I do think we have to make some changes in the way the NSA operates. I think finding that delicate balance between security and freedom that's ever present in our society, and I will be supporting smart legislation so that when the NSA goes to court to get more information, there's a check and balance, and I'll be working on that very hard.
And let's bring in some callers. Ron, you're first up here. Good morning.
Good morning. I've got a question that goes back to the cleanup of Hamilton Air Force Base.
Oh, my goodness. That
and,
takes us back a ways.
Well, it certainly does. And right now, the DOD is transferring a site called Parcel 1A over to the Novato School District. And it's a site where there was a gas station and fueling station, which has a very large plume that goes from its point all the way to landfill 26, which is that dump site on top of soil that has water interaction. So I'm concerned that if the school takes it, they should get a separate analysis of what's on there, because they're only looking at MTBE and not the other toxins.
Ron's been calling up about Hamilton, probably back to the days, Senator, when you were a Marin County supervisor, but it needs
it's a fair issue.
A cleanup. It obviously needs a cleanup.
Now, I don't know about this specific transfer, so I will look into it more, but let me just say, as a general rule, if you're going to have kids playing on a site, Ron's right. You need to know what's in it, and you need to not guess at it. It's got to be cleaned up totally. or just cover it up and don't use it. You know, use it for a parking lot. So I think toxic waste cleanup is very, very serious, and I'm glad that he's interested, and I would absolutely get more involved if you could definitely send me a letter about it, Ron, and follow up.
And thank you, Ron, for the call. And let me go to another caller. Wynn, good morning.
Good morning. I just saw a recent study that 73 senators are millionaires. So I have two questions. One, were they millionaires before they got to Congress, or have they become millionaires while they're in Congress? And secondly, why is it that Congress has its own health care and retirement programs and doesn't participate like the rest of us?
Well, that's not true. I'm on the exchange to get my health care. And Congress is treated just like all federal employees, don't have a separate system. But now, actually, we do have to go to the exchange. So we're not even treated that way for health care, but our pension is the same as federal employees. In terms of your first question, were they millionaires? It's all public record. I would assume if people had a home in California, they probably were worth $1 million or close to it with their car and their home. But you'd have to look. Each colleague is different from the one before. I mean, the sense I get behind you is you're really angry, and I'm sorry.
You have moved. You and your husband have moved to Rancho Mirage, and I'm wondering, and I suppose a lot of people are wondering, is that a harbinger to possibly retiring?
Well, since I moved 10 years ago, no.
So are you going to run again?
And I also have a small place in Oakland.
Going to run again?
Oh, you're asking me if I'm going to run again?
That's what I'm asking.
I have several years left on my term, and you will be the first to know when I announce.
I will take you up on that. And I also want to be the first to know about House of Cards, because I would be remiss if I didn't ask you. I know you've been binging on watching House of Cards, seeing some parallels there and learning more about the way things work politically and governmentally.
No. I'm not learning how things work. I know how things work.
I mean,
I'm there right in the middle of it.
You have seen all that corruption and ruthlessness firsthand, I realize, but maybe the script.
I'll tell you what you see in the House of Cards. You see how people who want to get something done will use every single thing they can to get it done. Now, as someone who loves to get things done, I want to pass my highway bill, I want to pass my water bill, I want to pass after-school legislation, I want to pass the minimum wage. I will use a lot of tools, but not all the tools they use. I mean, let me put it that way. They just go to the extreme there.
Well, they teach you tricks about Machiavellianism that probably maybe even some people up on the Hill don't know, I would think.
Well, I don't think I've ever met anyone quite like this speaker who I don't want to have a spoiler alert here, but some of the things this guy does are just, you know, out of this world, and he manages to just get back to normal in 5 minutes after killing someone. It's quite an experience.
As long as we're talking about things like that, you have another novel in the works?
I don't have another novel in the works at this point. I barely have time to get through the day.
Well, but I'm glad you had
someday,
time.
Someday.
You had time for us. I appreciate your being with us.
Thanks, Michael.
Senator Barbara Boxer represents California in the United States Senate. We're going to take another turn. We're actually going to look at something that you may never have seen right up on Mount Tamalpais when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.